Saturday Night Live's 21st Day of Sobriety, held on December 4th, 1993, at El Paseo Shopping Center, room 120 in San Jose, California. The main speaker for this meeting is Bob O. from Modesto. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL tape library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
I love it. I'm Bob Ochoa and I'm an alcoholic. You know, this... Before I even get started, I want you to know something right now that I'm one of those alcoholics that when I start to share, man, I just can't maintain sometimes, you know. By that I mean I may get emotional. And one of the things that's making me feel that way right now is the fact that my mother's here. And my sister's here. And I guess it's just it's just her way of finding out if I'm still sober. I don't know. But I want her to know that it's because of the people just like yourselves that are sitting out there right now. And I'm talking about the people that would one day all the way up to... And I don't know if this young lady right here that said that she had 7 days, if that's her mother sitting next to her with 7 years. Grandmother, God bless you both, man. I have to believe that some prayers have been answered someplace. I just have to believe that. There's a lady back there that happens to be my mother that's sitting on a chair back there, man, that has said a whole lot of prayers for her son, who's an alcoholic and an addict out there living in the streets, and she couldn't do a goddamn thing about it. You know, she couldn't do anything. The best that she could come up with was to say a prayer once in a while. And I just want to share with you something that she shared with me not too very long ago. She told me that she used to pray that I was dead. And I just couldn't understand that. I'm her only son. I couldn't for the life of me understand why she would even come close to that. And I asked her, what happened? Why? You know, why were you saying those kind of prayers? And she said, well, you know, Bob, she said, I'll never forget this. She said, every time I'd hear a siren, man, it was either an ambulance or a police car or something, and I knew for damn sure that they were going after you. And I could just imagine while you're out there in the streets living the way that you were living, that they just imagine the condition that you were in. And at least if you were dead, then I wouldn't have to worry about it every time I heard a siren. And I didn't know what she meant. And today I do. And I want to share with you, and I'm talking about here in San Jose, that in 4 days, it'll be 22 years that she's not had to say that prayer since. You know, somebody that was very instrumental when I first got here is here tonight too. Aside from Fred, my man Fred has touched a lot of lives, man. One guy that's here tonight is Sam. My man Sam. We've never lost touch. I moved to Modesto. He stayed in San Jose, Sunnyvale, Cupertino, Mountain View. But we've never lost touch. And thank God that it was somebody like that that was here when I got here. I don't know who it is that you're going to link on to, those of you that are relatively new. I don't know who it is that you're going to link on to, but God, if you could link on to somebody like I linked on to Sam and Sam linked on to me, man, and we made it through this thing called recovery, you know. We just shared with one another. We were crazy, and we still are, you know, but we made it. I had to get that off my chest, man, because this is what I was feeling right now, you know. And I'm so very grateful that Diane asked me to come here tonight. I really am. And to have those people in my life here. By rights, I should not be here tonight. And I say that only because from the lifestyle that I had to where I'm at today in life, somebody else should be up here sharing. It shouldn't really be me. I get in touch with my disease going back when I was a very young man growing up in the streets of Oakland. Born and raised in Oakland, California. And I can remember, as far as alcohol and drugs, primarily alcohol, the problems that it created in my family. And I could see the living evidence, the living proof, if you will, that there was a lot of heartache that was created by different people drinking in our family. And the pain and the tears and everything that comes with certain drinking, the my kind of drinking. And that was my first, if you will, look at what alcoholism was really all about. And this is before I even took my first drink. And in growing up, I primarily participated, if you will, in sports. That was my bag. I love sports. I still love sports. And played with a lot of, you know, went on to school, played all the sports that I could possibly play growing up. And yeah, don't get me wrong, the family that I had was a happy family, okay? But I could still see the evidence of drinking and drugs and what have you. But in growing up, my thing was sports. I played sports, played a lot of sports, and got into high school, and that's when I really got involved with sports and won a few awards and what have you, and played with a lot of people that went on and later on played professional ball. I'm talking about people like John Brody and Bill Russell, Frank Robinson, that caliber of ball. All came out of Oakland about the same time that I did. But anyway, even then, you know, I believe the alcoholic, like myself, when we do things and we put 100% effort in, we can do things well. And like I say, there was a few awards that were given, that were presented to me. And I even got a scholarship to go to USF. But not ever having any study habits whatsoever and just playing ball and that type of thing, I started to flunk out. The type of drinking that I did when I was in high school, man, was I started, you know, I had a few beers with the guys when we went to dances and stuff like that. I was buying a couple of six packs and I could remember not ever getting drunk, but I don't know if anybody can identify with acting drunk. Huh? You know what I'm talking about? You ain't loaded. You just want to act that way because it's crazy, you know? And I can remember having a couple of beers and just acting drunk. You know, that way I can make a fool of myself and I can blame it on to the alcohol. But anyway, this is the kind of drinking that I started off with. But I remember just having a couple of beers one particular night. I got a little bit carried away and I got a certain kind of a feeling. And the feeling felt pretty damn good. And I can remember it made me a lot of things that I really wasn't, you know. Basically, maybe there's some of you that can identify with this. I'm very shy, bashful, if you will, you know. It's very hard for me to communicate. You know, at the dances, I couldn't ask a girl to dance because she just might say no. And my God, man, how could I ever, especially if my buddies were looking. Huh? I mean, that's heavy. It's not so bad when they say no if there's nobody looking, but when they're all looking and they all laugh like that, you know. I mean, that's major, man. That's major. You know what I'm talking about, you know? And I'd always go back. They say no, and I'd always go back to my buddies and say, oh, she got a bad leg. Her leg is hurting her, you know. You know, that kind of stuff. You got to cover up, man. So you begin, you know. But I remembered having a couple of beers too many, if you will, and I felt good, and I got this kind of courage, man. I felt really good, you know. And I had to go up to ask somebody to dance was no big thing. She said, no, I figured it was her loss, you know, that type. I mean, that's the kind of attitude I got real fast, you know. No? Okay, screw you. I mean, that's what I'd say, you know. And then I go back, and my story had changed. It wasn't that she had a bad foot. What it became then is she's too ugly. And I don't want to dance with her anyway, you know, that type of thing. But that'd make up these stories. So anyway, you know, that just kind of shows you the kind of character that was growing up at a very young age. I used alcohol to give me courage and to make me talk a certain way, look a certain way, and, you know, feel a certain way inside, you know. And it worked. It worked for a while. But my main thing was I never got into what I can call trouble in high school, okay? When I went on to college and whatever, and I wasn't passing in college, like I didn't have any study habits, and I started to fail, flunk out of school. So a buddy of mine that lived up in around Placerville, he had moved up there from the Oakland area, and he told me, I was up there visiting him one day, and he said, let's join the Marine Corps, and it sounded like a pretty good deal to me. And I didn't have anything going for me, and college wasn't really all that much. I knew I was flunking out of school and everything, so I joined the Marine Corps. And in the Marine Corps is where I had my first spiritual awakening. You know, I mean, they treated me there like I never knew that people treat you. You know, those of you that have been in the Marine Corps know what I'm talking about, man. I mean, they slap you around and they don't care. You know, that's just the way they do things. So I joined the service, and I joined the Marine Corps, and the first place that I went was overseas, in Okinawa and Japan, and in that area. Now, I don't know what took place over there. I have no idea what happened over there. Like I say, up until that time, I never really got in trouble with drinking, my drinking. I don't know whether it was at a young age, and not having the authority around, having access to the enlistment's club and Liberty and the bar action. I don't know what it was. But what I do know is that my drinking habit progressed. I mean, it progressed to the fact that, you know, I would go out on Liberty. I'm one of those people that started off a bar, drinking in bars. Okay, there's something about the bar action that bar people know about. I don't even have to tell you anything about it. I don't know whether it's the beautiful aroma in bars or whether it's, you know, the clientele that goes to these bars. I don't know what it is, but I love the bar action. It might have had something to do with the booze that they served in there too, but when I started drinking overseas, it seems like all sense of responsibility would just leave. I mean, I started to drink, man, and now it was starting, and I called it partying. You know, I loved to party, and I went out with guys that loved to party, and we got drunk, and the problem was that I could never make it back to the base, and I don't know why. You know, I would end up drinking. I thought we drank just as much, you know, but I would end up getting drunk and forgetting to go back to the base. You know, well, they frown on that in the military. You know, they call that AWOL or whatever, you know. And I got into a lot of trouble. But it didn't bother me. You know, it really didn't bother me. I worked for the brig, and I knew that they weren't going to lock me up in my own brig, you know, that type of thing. So I continued to drink the way that I wanted to drink, and my drinking got worse and worse and worse, you know, to the point where I lost stripes, I lost privileges of going out on liberty. Little things started leaving, and I just look back at that, and that's basically what took place. I can see it today as to how my problems started to develop, you know, and it started over there. And while I was overseas, you know, the money that they pay you while you're in the service, it ain't nothing, man. I mean, you can't, a good drunk, you know, I mean, he goes through money over there like crazy, but there were guys over there that used to loan you money. They front you money. And those of you who've been in service know what I'm talking about. I mean, there's guys all at every barracks, man, that'll loan you 20 to go out on liberty as long as you pay them back 40 on payday. Huh? And those guys today are living in penthouses, man, off of people like you and I, you know. I mean, they're out there, living in style right now off the money they made off of people like me. But I needed those people. You see, because I wasn't able to hold on to money at all. I drank my money up. I used my money up. You know, but there was always ways to get more. Not necessarily money, but to get more alcohol and to get more drugs. And one of the ways that I found out when I was overseas was, I always thought, I've always thought that I've had a real good voice, a singing voice. Yeah? And you guys know, I mean, those, you know how what I'm talking about. It seems like when you have a couple of drinks, man, you can sound like Lionel Richie or really, you know, somebody, right? Garth Brooks. I don't care who you want to sound. You get a couple of drinks and you can sing, you know? And so I became a singer overseas, you know. And what happened to me, my buddies and I, two or three of my buddies and I went on a Liberty. And I remember this one guy, and my mother taught me this song when I was real young. And this band was playing up there. The band consisted of a guy on a bass, I think it was a saxophone, a guy on the drums, and something else. I don't remember what the other one was. But they were playing this song called Besame Mucho, okay? And that's an old Mexican song, right? And I said, man, you know, I know that song, and I'm going to sing. You know, and this little combo is up on a stage just like this, man. I said, well, I'm going to get up there and do my number. So I went up there, and I said, you know what, you mind if I sing this song? I know how to sing this song. So he said, come on. He went like that, man. So I guess he said, yeah, come on up. So I went up there. I got pictures of this, man. You know, if anybody thinks I'm lying, I'll show you the pictures. You know, I got pictures of this. So I'm up there, and you know what? We can perform, man. You get a microphone like this, man. You got a couple of drinks in each hand. I mean, I do the whole thing. Them people on TV ain't got shit on me. I mean, I give it the body action, the eyes, the whole thing, you know. And I'm singing this song, man, and I'm drunk, right? And I'm singing this song, man, and I get through with this song. I sing it in English, and then I sing it in Spanish. And I don't know Spanish that goddamn well, man. But I sing it anyway. You know, I mean, you can fake it. They don't know. You're in Japan, man. Well, them guys going to know, you know. So I sing it in English and I sing it in Spanish, man. And guess what, man? I get through, you know. And after I get through, man, everybody in there gives me a standing ovation. I said, yes, excuse me. You know? Yeah, everybody in it. There was only seven people in there. And five of them were my friends, you know. But you know what? Let me tell you what happened. What happened is that they bought me some drinks. See? I didn't need to buy no drinks. Huh. That's all right. So next time they played that song, that's the only song I knew, man. Next time they played that song, I got up again. I got some more drinks. And I said, well, shit, this ain't bad. So what happened is that I became my own agent. And I toured Japan, man. And every place there was a nightclub in Japan, and first thing I'd ask them, you know that song, Besame Mucho? They said, yeah. I said, right on. I'd stay there for the rest of the night, you know. If they didn't know how to play it, I was gone. So I heard Pa say, man, we sing for our booze, we sing for our food, we do it. I mean, that was just one way of me doing it. I had to feed my disease, the disease that I didn't even know I had at the time, man. I had to feed it. And what I did by feeding it was that I was singing these songs, this one song. And you know what? This is how cunning, baffling, and powerful this disease is and how slick we are. I figured if they bought me drinks when I sang it in Spanish and in English, what if I learned it in Japanese? And guess what? You got it. I learned it. You know how you somebody will say something to you, and the way you hear it, the way you sing it, you say it or sing it, that's the way I learned a song in Japanese. Then I really was a hit. I mean, here's this Mexican in Japan, man, singing this song in Japanese. Don't even know what he's singing. The only reason he's doing it, man, is because he needs to get some booze. You understand what I'm talking about? Huh? Now, you tell me that you haven't gone to those lengths. I know you have. If you're an alcoholic like me, you get an easy touch, man, and you are going to do it. And you will not only do it once, you will do it until it wears out. That's just the way it is. Until they told me to get back to the United States, we don't care if you can sing in any goddamn language. We don't want you here no more. You go back home where you belong, you know. And that's the way it happens, man. That's just one of the things. And I got into a whole lot of trouble. You know, I used the black market over there, did a lot of illegal things, and got into a whole lot of trouble, but I didn't get locked up. I always, you know, alcoholics like you and I, man, and I think you ain't no different than me. I always got an ace in the hole. You know, if it isn't working for the bricks, I don't get locked up in it, man. It's always having an ace in the hole, you know. And that's basically how I skated out of a lot of things. It's just having that ace in the hole. You know, prepare yourself. You're going to go out in a drunk, don't we take precaution before we go out and get drunk? Especially if you drink the way that I do. And that's the way that I started out there over in Japan, you know. And little did I know Little did I know that somewhere along that line, man, there was an invisible line that you guys told me about when I got here that I had crossed, and I was never going to return back to drinking sociably, whatever the hell that is, or whatever. I managed to make, you know, and I didn't get no bad conduct discharges or dishonorable discharges like a lot of us do. That's only because they didn't catch me doing some of the things that I was doing. You know, that was the only reason. And I made it back over here, you know, to the United States, and I got stationed down in a little Marine Corps air wing down in L.A. called El Toro. And I was down there in Tustin, and I got working with the brig again. And over there, I'll tell you what, in Tustin and Santa Ana, man, they don't give a shit if you can sing Bésame Mucho in Spanish and everything. I tried it over there, man. They don't care nothing about that, you know. Matter of fact, in those little piano bars, you and I, we love those piano bars, especially the ones that think they can sing, right? They used to pay me not to sing. I mean, that's how bad it got. You know, shut up, man. Here you go again. You know, buy him a drink, man. Get him drunk so he can pass out someplace, you know. So I'm in Santa Ana, and I'm doing my time. I'm in the Marine Corps there. I'm getting ready to get discharged, and I was an MP and worked at the brig and what have you. And I remember I was in Long Beach one time down at the Pike, and I remember this gal doing a hula at this beauty contest. And I kind of fell in love with the way she did the hula, and I asked her to marry me. And we got married, and she didn't know she was married and an alcoholic. And we stayed together for quite some time. And we have a daughter. I have a daughter by this lady. And I didn't know that my drinking was really, you know, gotten to the extent that she worked at the Bank of America, but she did a lot of illegal things while she was working there. Okay? And some of the things that I can create because of my drinking, I don't know about yours, but because of mine, is that I can cause people to forge. She worked at the Bank of America, and she got involved in a whole lot of embezzlement, if you will, because of my drinking and because of the way that I've... You know, when I drank, I was working at IBM in San Jose, man, at that time. You know, I had a good job bringing home good money, but, you know, it wasn't bringing home nothing. You know what I mean? I mean, mom took care of the kid. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there was no such thing as bringing home the money. As soon as I got that money in my hand, I don't know why alcoholics, man, as soon as we get money in our hand, it's payday, it's hard to make it home. It's hard to go home when you got money in your hands. You know what I'm talking about? There's something about having that money that says it should be associated with drinking or using drugs. Automatically. You don't go home and see if the refrigerator's full. What's that all about? You know, no way. So what if the bills are catching, you know, so what? It don't make no difference. But that's the way that I did things, you know. So this lady had a job at the Bank of America. And she had a real good job. And here in San Jose. And because of what her husband's lifestyle was, she had to provide for herself and the child. So what she did is she did these illegal things. Okay? And it got to be so heavy for her that she went back to the islands. That's where she was from. Never to return again. And you know, I used to take trips going back to Hawaii as though it was going from San Jose to Sunnyvale, man. I'd get drunk, man, and it's like, I'd go over there, you know, and I look at them today as self-pity trips. I know why. I was trying to get my family back again. I didn't like being alone. You know, so I fly over to Hawaii like it was nothing. Like it was nothing, you know. And, but, to no avail, man. They weren't about. She said, you know what, man? I don't care if you know, Bob, you've done this time and time again. You know, sooner or later people get sick and tired of being sick and tired because of the way that you're living your life. And she looked at me, man, and she just said, you know what? Why don't you go back there to San Jose, man, and leave us alone, you know. And that was her parting words with me. And I went to Hawaii, I don't know, 7 or 8 times during that period of time trying to get this family back. And I never went there sober. I didn't know until 1988, man, when I went to a convention over there that they actually have sand and palm trees on Waikiki. You know, I got off the plane, man, and I knocked on the door, man, and it would go directly to jail. Either go to jail or get back on a plane tomorrow, man, one of the two. You know? I was in Hawaii, man, one time, and I can remember my mother asking my mother to send me some money, man, so that I could go home. Hawaii is supposed to be paradise. Hawaii's supposed to be paradise, but I could remember her asking her to send me some money so that I could come home. And she would send me a ticket. And the alcoholic that I was, I just cash it in and spend it. Huh? That's what you do. That's what you did. That's what I did. You know, and then I'd ask her, maybe a couple of months later, man, would you send me some more money? Don't we pray on mothers? Don't we pray on people that really care about us? Huh? Don't we try to take advantage so that we can continue to feed this disease? I called her again. Mom, send me some more money. Or send me a ticket. Well, she did. She sent me another ticket, and guess what? On the ticket it said non-transferable. That's pretty smart, man. Mama got smarter after that, you know? But anyway, these trips to Hawaii, man, were to no avail, and I came back. I mean, every time I came back, I promised myself, and I made the same promise that each and every one of us seems to make, man. I'm never going to drink again. I don't want to drink again. Look at what happens to my life. And you know what? I really meant that. Every time that I tried to stop drinking, I really meant it. I tried to give it my all. Sometimes it would work for a day, sometimes 2 days, sometimes even a week. But every time that I said that, I was in such a lousy shape, man, that I promised myself that I wasn't going to get back in that shape again. I didn't know what I was up against. I didn't know that this thing was called alcoholism. So it was just a matter of time. You know, I got more good jobs, man. I got real good jobs here in San Jose. I worked for Hewlett Packard in Palo Alto. I worked for a lot of big electronic companies here in this area. Okay? But I always managed to go with the people that were drinking. I met this other lady while I was working at Hewlett Packard, okay? And lo and behold, I was doing with that family the same thing that I had done with my first family. I mean, when an alcoholic like me, I mean, it makes no... The faces are different, but the lifestyle don't change. I continue to affect these people the same way. You know, now it was this wife and my son, okay? And one day, out of a clear blue sky, and I don't know where this came up from, but... Somebody got a hold of her. She got some information or something, man. What she came up with is, why don't you go to AA? And I said, what the hell is that? And she says, I really don't know too much about it. All I know is that people go there that used to drink that don't drink no more. And that didn't sound too inviting to me. Now, what in the hell do I want to be with a bunch of people that used to drink? I mean, used to drink. Now, if she had said that used to drink and now only drink once in a while, I may have considered. I mean, I really might have considered it. But she said, the key for me was, they don't drink no more. And I said, what an order, I can't go through with it, you know. I didn't want no part of that, man. I didn't want no part of that at all. You know, and I'll tell you how I know I didn't want a part of it. Because the very first meeting that I ever went to, all I saw were old people. No offense on anybody back there in the back row, but you know what? All I saw were old people. I'm talking about these people had white hair or no hair. They were old. They were antiques. And I could see why they were all washed up. When you get... Man, you know what? Talk to me after the meeting, man. But that's just what I saw. That's just what I saw. And I was sober. Yeah, right. But anyway, I saw all these old nights, and first thing I just said, you know what, man, I don't belong in this. But you know that feeling when you don't belong somewhere, you know it. It's a gut-level feeling that we get. I did not belong in AA, you know, because I still had something inside of me that says, you still got to party, man. Don't go over there and shuck and jive. You know, just do this thing for a little while, and you'll be out of here in no time. Don't even worry about it. And that's what happened to me. I came into here with the attitude that it was only going to be a temporary thing. And that's what it was. Have you ever gone to a meeting? And I would venture to say that there's at least one person in this room right now. Have you ever gone to a meeting knowing that you were going to drink again? I have. I knew it. Do you think I was going to tell some of these old-timers that shit? I mean, I thought you were supposed to come to AA and live happily ever after and never think about a drink. But you know what? I thought about it. And these guys would come up to me, how you doing? About my mouth be falling, my eyes are crossed and everything. You know, I'm dying for a drink, man. And they got the nerve to ask you, how you doing? You know, they can see how you're doing, man. It's just that stupid question again, you know? How you doing? I'm doing good, man. How the hell you think I'm doing? You know, that kind of... That's the way that I would answer them, man. Because that's the way I felt. And I did that for 7 months. And you know what happened with me? 7 months... I mean, this is 7 months of going to one meeting a week. That is a lot of meaning when you don't want to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, there may be somebody out there saying, well, shit, you didn't give it a chance. I did, man. I went to one goddamn meeting a week, and that was one meeting a week too many for me. Okay? 7 months went by, man, and I didn't drink, and I didn't use, man, and I was just waiting for the day it would happen. And you know what? My wife gave me $2.50 to go down and get a haircut at the barber college. And because she knew, you know, people know what alcoholics and drug addicts can do with $2.50. I could be gone for 2 weeks with $2.50. How do you do that? And we're all welfare. You know, I mean, how do you do that kind of stuff? You guys know. You know what I'm talking about. You can turn $2 bill, man, into a two-week drunk. So she gave me $2.50 to go get a haircut, man. I was on my way there, and I hadn't had nothing in 7 months. So you can imagine. And I'm sitting there at the light in my car, and this old 61 Chevy pulls up alongside of me. This is one of my old partners that I hadn't seen in a long time. And his name just so happened to be Jesus. Jesus pulled up in his Chevy next to me, man. And he looked at me. He looked at me like that, and right away I caught his eye, and I turned my back, man, because I didn't want him to see me. Because I knew that he might offer me something, right? And I don't know what made me turn my back, but I turned my back, man, and I'm looking up to see if that goddamn light had changed, and it wouldn't change. And all of a sudden, man, he had one of those little funny cigarettes. You know the ones that people are still smoking today, man, claiming all that sobriety? Huh? I don't know if they got them here in San Jose, but we got them in Modesto. I don't know if there's anybody, please don't be offended if there's anybody in here smoking dope and picking up chips. Because if you are, it's only a matter of time, my man or my lady. And besides that, you ain't got nothing I want. And that's just where it's at. And you know what? You may be sitting there telling me, well, I ain't got nothing to give you. You're right. And that's just the way it is for me. You know, there was a man that told me a long time ago, man, and somewhere in that book it says total abstinence. That means, and you know how he quoted it? You don't smoke nothing, you don't drink nothing, you don't sell nothing, you don't carry nothing. That's just the way it is for you, Bob, because you're one of those people that are sicker than others, man. And you gotta pay attention. And when you got that shit in your pocket, and you're out there making a living selling it, and coming to AA meetings, knowing that you're gonna go out there and sell it again, you're in trouble. It's just a matter of time for you. And that man put his friendship on the line for me. That man was willing to give up the friendship that we had in order to save my ass. And I'm so grateful. That man is Paz. You heard his name mentioned at this particular day, man, a lot of times. Because he's affected a lot of people's life by that good ass kicking AA. And that's what he gave me. Out of the small corner of his heart, man, is what he did for me. Anyway, I'm at the stoplight, in case you forgot where I was at. I'm at the stoplight, man, and like I said, Jesus is sitting right there in a 61 Chevy, right? And after a while, man, I just said, God, I could swear that light took, man, an hour and a half to change, man. Because I looked over like that real fast at a glance, and he was smoking one of those little funny cigarettes. And, you know, I knew it was good, just by the way his eyes crossed when he smoked. You know? And right away, man, I swear that the aroma out of his car came out of the window, over to my window, under my nose, and I found myself looking at Jesus and praying for his attention. Man, I'm doing like this. I want him to see me now, right? Because I know he's smoking some of that stuff. And I'm going like this, man, and all of a sudden he looks at me and he goes, and you know what? I want to share it with you right now. Alcoholics and addicts got a language all of their own. We don't even have to say words, man. We don't need to, we can converse, and you know what we're talking about. This is our conversation, my conversation with Jesus that day. I looked at him and he goes, you know that, you want some. And I looked at him and I went, huh? You goddamn right, I want some. And then he goes, huh? What's that mean? Go around the corner, right? And I'll be goddamn if alcoholics always end up, we end up in parks, man. Like nobody else knows that we get loaded in parks. Nobody else knows that. He goes like this, man, and I said, I don't know what happened to the haircut. I forgot about it. And I could already taste it. You know what I'm talking about? I already had it in my hand, man. I'm sitting in my own car. And when he went like that, man, I knew I was going to go over there. And I went over to the pub. We sat, and I said, Jesus, I haven't seen you for a long time. And he didn't say heal, brother. He didn't say none about that. He handed me that joint. I took a hit off that joint. I was gone for 7 years. 7 goddamn years off a hit of lightweight marijuana. It wasn't no heroin. It wasn't no LSD. It wasn't no cocaine. It was bullshit marijuana. Some of us love that stuff. And I took a hit off of that, and I was gone. Not that I'd ever been. You know what I'm talking about? Not that I'd ever been here. But you know goddamn well I wasn't going to come back to an AA meeting smoking a little bit of weed. See, I don't know how people, man, come to AA and they say, well, you know what, man, I got loaded on Friday and I got back to the program on Monday. You know? How do you do that? How do you plan to come back 2 days later? And for sure come back. I've never been able to do that. You know what? I was gone for 7 years, man. 7 years of my life was wasted. 7 years of going through the hell that each and every one of you, not just me, but the family, I took my family with me. I took my wife, I took my kids, I took my employer, I took my mother, my father, everybody that was associated with me, that cared about me, I took them with me. And for 7 years, I went through a period in my life that I could best describe to you, because you're the only ones that understand this word. I'm not talking about the big fancy ones, like pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That sounds pretty bad. But I went through a place called hell. That's where I went. And you know what? I got a chance to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous 7 years later. God, I guess, I don't know, I just guessed that God got sick and tired of Bob being sick and tired. Because I got tapped on the shoulder one day, man. They said, get back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know where that individual was, man, that planted that seed. I would imagine it's one of those meetings that I didn't want to be at. But I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got the chance. One more chance. And you know where I was? I was in Redwood City, California when it happened. I'm one of those drinkers, man. I'm coming over here today, man. I saw Hamilton Avenue. And I used to drink in a place called Hamilton Lounge a long time ago. I don't know if any of you ever remember that place. Or one of those elaborate clubs downtown called the Sapphire. And the Rock Cafe. And DeRosa's. The Bachelor's Club. Pardon me? Blue Star? Pre-Star? Oh, Three Star. They changed the name, man. That's what it was. Yeah, you know, those are the nice places that I drank at, you know. In Redwood City, California is when God, he took all he could have with me, man, and I guess it has something to do with the power of prayer. And I want to tell you that in 1967, my mother is sitting here right now. God bless her. My mother was praying for me long before I ever got here. I got here in 1971. In 1967, she used to send money to a place called the St. Jude Shrine in Baltimore, Maryland. And for those of you that don't know, St. Jude happens to be the patron saint for the helpless and the hopeless. She used to send him a little donation. I don't know, $25, $50, whatever it was. And she got a letter one day from Father Luciano, saying that they hoped that her son, who is suffering from this problem of alcoholism, could someday find the courage to change his life. And it was people like my mother and people like each and every one of you that were around these AA meetings praying for people that were out there like me, that were still trying to prove, if not to themselves, but to everyone else, man, that they weren't an alcoholic. They didn't have a problem. At least not yet. And I came, I ended up in Redwood City, and I was in this motel room. I don't know where all the glamour went, man, because there wasn't too much glamour that afternoon, I'll tell you. I'm talking about the Waldorf Astoria and the Tonga Room and all these beautiful places that I used to attend in San Francisco and all those beautiful clubs, you know. But I was in this little motel room, and I came to on the floor of this motel room. And I'll never, ever forget. You know, I've been blessed with total recall of the last time that I was drunk and loaded. I hope that you have been too. I've been so blessed with it that I feel I can feel it and I can smell it. Those just happened last night, and it didn't, thank God. But I remember being in that motel room, and when I came to, I was face down. I was face down on the floor, and I came to, and I was in my own puke. My eyes were all matted together. My lips were split open about a half inch wide. The top of my roof was split open. I couldn't see. I couldn't breathe. And I was a mess. I didn't even know where I was. You know, usually when I had a good drunk, man, I came. If I woke up, man, and there was no bars, it was okay. This time it wasn't. This time I came face to face. I couldn't see nothing, you know, and I didn't even know where the hell I was. I know the smell was gory, and the feeling that I had was sick and everything, and the disease was alive and well within me. And when I came to, I just happened to reach around because I couldn't see, and I happened to make it to the bathroom. For the first time in my life, man, I reached out and turned on the hot water, and I got this towel, and I started to wipe the mucus away from my face. For those of you that can reflect back the last time that you were drunk and loaded and wanted to die and didn't like what you had going for you, you know what I'm talking about. I don't really have to be specific, but I say it out loud because it wasn't very long ago that that happened to me. They put mirrors in places like that, but there was that mirror, you know. And you know what? Mirrors don't lie, man. Mirrors don't lie. The alcoholic lies. Mirrors don't. For the first time in my life, I came face to face with this thing called alcoholism and drug addiction. First time. I've seen myself in the mirror many, many times. You wake up in the back seat of a car, man, you just look in the mirror, and you're a mess, man. You deserve it to be there and the whole thing. This time was different. And you know what I thought about? I thought about a guy that I had met called Bob Little. And he gave me his phone number, man, and he asked me to call him when I wanted some help. And the only reason that I remember this guy is because I was in a men's group in Redwood City one time, a long time ago prior to that, and somebody was giving him a birthday cake. And he told me to call him. And guess what? I picked up the phone, and that was the first time in my life. You remember the first time in your life that you asked for help? I need help. I mean, those are like foreign words. I'm sure glad that he didn't say, what do you need help for? Because I wouldn't know what to say. All he told me is, I want to see you tomorrow, man. Please try not to drink until then, but I'll see you tomorrow. I'm going to a meeting, and he told me where I was at. The next day I went to that meeting, I haven't found it necessary to drink since. You know? Like I say, why I thought of Alcoholics Anonymous, I will never know. You know, I was given one more chance, man. And I came to you. And the things that you suggested at the very beginning, I thought that you were absolutely insane. Because what I heard when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous was that you ain't gonna ever drink for the rest of your goddamn life, fella. And you know what? I did not like the sound of that. Nor do I like the sound of that even today. I've got the kind of disease that don't want to hear that you ain't going to feed it for the rest of its life. That's a long time. You people are talking about 45 years, give me a break. 20 years, 22, 23 years, give me a break. That's what I used to say when I'd hear this stuff. And then little Joe Snyder, man, at one of these meetings that I didn't want to be at, he was there, and he had a little red wino nose, man, and I'll never forget him. He's passed on now, but little Joe Snyder said the magic words for me. And I pray to God that maybe somebody in this room tonight might be able to use this and postpone their next drink one day at a time. Because that's what he told me. That's the magic that he gave me. He says, Bob, you don't have to drink one day at a time, man. Just one day at a time. Try it. Try it for one day. And you know what? The man has saved my life. Then they went on, you know, after I started getting this one day at a time, then people started saying, well, have you ever gotten the big book? I said, what's that? Huh? So it's just something that we read periodically, but it's going to save your life, man. It might even change it if you pick it up. And you know what? I don't know if you're like me, but big book ain't got no pictures. You know what I mean? I mean, give me Playboy magazine, give me the Sports Illustrated, give me anything, but don't give me the big book. It ain't got no pictures, man. It ain't got nothing. You know, somebody told me one of those, this was at a men's group. You know, we were talking about sponsorship. We had a panel up here today, man, and talking about something. I remember them first guys, man, that got a hold of me. I mean, they turned me every way but loose. They knew that I was in trouble. It was just, you know, I changed my mind so easy. And they suggested that I try to read the big book, man. And I said, no, you know, I'm not into reading. I can't comprehend. I don't retain, if you will. You know what I'm talking about? And these guys used to say, well, we'll help you. And they used to help. And I didn't want help. I just didn't want to go to jail. I didn't want no more stitches. I wanted to get a new car and get a job and get some nice clothes and, you know, get those things that I deserved. But I just didn't want to do all that kind of work that you guys were doing around here. And they knew it. They knew it. But they wouldn't let me go. They would not let me go. And then they had the nerve to make me a secretary of a men's group after 6 months of going to this goddamn awful place, man. They told me, you're the chair. You're the secretary for this Tuesday night men's group. And I said, I don't want to be. And then they said, yeah, we know. That's why you are. You know? And for the first 2 years of sobriety, how they told me to read the big book, incidentally, and how I really, it sounded pretty good to me. They told me that if I picked up that big book, I'm just sharing this, passing it on to you. If I read that big book and took one page and read it each night, just one page, each night, starting tonight, by the time I got back to the end of the end of the book, I'd have over 2 years of sobriety. Heavy, huh? And then there, and the reason being, is because, and they used to tell me because there's even some blank pages in there you don't even have to read on those days, you know. Just, I mean, they had it covered, man, these guys, you know. And I said, well, that don't sound too bad, man. And I could hardly wait. I just used to see how many pages I'd have to read before I got to the blank one. You know what I'm talking about? Huh? And when you get two blank ones in a row, you got a good time going, man. But that's the way I used to do things, man. These are the way these guys used to nurse me back, you know. And they're the ones that gave me the foundation that I think that every alcoholic that is a member of Alcoholic Anonymous needs. We need some kind of a foundation. We don't know how to stand up by ourselves. I sure the hell didn't. And I needed some people, man, to prop me up. There ain't nobody in this room right now that don't need somebody to lean on. And I don't care how long you've been sober. Each and every one of us needs somebody to lean on. And I had to learn that. And these were the people that made me believe that was true. Because probably my shakiest time as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, man, was probably within that first 6 months, if not the first year. Because like I said, I get bored easy. I get changed my mind. And if you're going through any problem, I don't know why I'd come up with this every time if there was some kind of a crisis or something, man. Well, shit, if I'm going to hurt this bad, I might as well go out there and just hurt. Pick it up again, man. I mean, this ain't worth it, you know. And how wrong I was. Then I moved from the Redwood City area down to the Santa Clara, San Jose area. You know, and I was in this area for about 6 years. And I became a real estate tycoon. This is a story in itself. I thought I was the man of the year, man. And at that time it was Van Vleck Realty. I don't even know if they're still around or what, but Van Vleck Realty, they had Bob Ochoa on their roster, you know. Then Allstate Realty, and then, you know, and as a matter of fact, I worked for Van Vleck right across the street from Sunnyvale, right across the street from Hollenbeck meeting. And I used to go to meetings right across the street. And that's when I used to run into Sam, man, down at the Winchester Group, you know. I'll never forget my introduction to Sam. And I want to share this with him because it had such an impact on me. I've shared it before at group level. I've even shared it with Sam. At that particular time, and I don't know if this still exists here in San Jose or surrounding towns around this area, but at that particular time, they didn't want addicts in AA meetings. I don't know if the controversy still exists. It's none of my business, okay? It really isn't. At that particular time, because I live in Modesto now. If I lived here, it would be. But at that particular time, I remember Sam at this one particular meeting. It was in a Quonset hut, man. He'd come up at this, man, and he'd say, you know what, I understand that they don't want addicts here. And all he said, and I was brand new, all he said, if anybody wants to throw me out, come on. Then he'd pick up a chair. And I looked at Sam, and I said, shit. I ain't got them kind of balls, you know. I mean, there ain't no way. And I swear to God, I was attracted to that. I was attracted not so much as that he was ready to start swinging that chair, but that he wanted sobriety that bad. He was willing to get his ass kicked. There was a lot of people that wanted to throw his ass out. And I said, wow. And I grabbed onto the man, you know, and we became the best of friends. We call it love around these rooms, you know. But he's never left. He's never been out of my life since that day. You know, and I want to thank him personally for that, man. And it's people like that, and the guy that lives in Georgia called Chick, we used to think he was crazy, and he is, you know, and Paz, and Jack Holt, and Allie's house, and all these guys, and my man Al, all these guys, you know. They're the ones that taught me. They're the ones that supported me when I needed the support. Danny was right when he said early, man, they never turned their back on me. They're always willing to help. You know, I'm not the man that I'm first when I first came in. I'm just not that same man. I'm gonna shut this up by just sharing something that has a very, you know, a whole lot of meaning to me. And to a lot of people, they really don't mean nothing. I just want to share with you that this morning I got up in my own bed, man, with my beautiful wife laying next to me. And you know what? She's got the nerve to go out and buy flannel sheets. Huh? I mean, my wife bought some flannel sheets, man. And I, you know, every time I jump in that bed, it's like I'm in a coma. And she said, you know, she comes up and she says, it's time to get up. I just look at her and say, I mean, sometimes I even play like I'm dead, you know. I mean, this is the way I get treated today. I'm talking about from an alcoholic man that used to go up to a Chevron gas station so that he could borrow the key, so that he can go into the toilet to wash himself, give himself a bath. And then the attendant looking at you, man, and saying, depending on how you look at, depending on how you smell and what you look like, as to whether he would give you the key or not. Huh? Not this morning. This morning was beautiful. This morning, Bob Ochoa woke up with Sally Ochoa, man, in our own home, getting ready to come to San Jose, California, so that he can come in front of a bunch of alcoholics and addicts and let them know how proud not only he, but his mother feel about being a member of this particular thing called AA. That's what it's all about for me. I am, man. I am so grateful. I am, you know, I got in my own shower. I still talk about this in Modesto all the time. They get tired of hearing this shit. But that's all right. Somebody's going to listen one of these days. I mean, it's almost like I got a captured audience, man, because you guys ain't never heard this, man. I mean, I feel I'm going to roll now. But anyway, no. I woke up, you know, and I jump in my shower, right? Oh, you jump in my shower, man, and I got shampoo. Not only that, I got two kinds. I got, in case my hair is regular that day or it's oily, you know? Not only that, I got a thing called conditioner. Huh? Excuse me. That ain't too goddamn bad for an alcoholic. You tell me, man, if I ain't come a long ways. Huh? And you know what? This is going to really blow you out of the water. I even got over my, you know where the water comes out? I got a thing called soap and a rope. No more going to those Chevron gas stations, getting that gravel that comes out of those containers, man, and doing that one. Soap and a rope. Mom bought that. Huh? To a lot of people, that don't mean nothing. That don't mean nothing. What if I told you I even use Q-tips today? Huh? And you know what? I used to think that Q-tips were for little babies, man. You clean them inside of the nose. My wife can tell you all this is truth. I ain't shucking and jiving, man. I didn't come here to this program to shuck and jive. This is facts. And I buy 500 at a time, man, because you know what? I'm serious. I don't just buy those little boxes of 50. And you get the wood ones, man. Don't get the plastic. Get the wood ones because you can really dig in with the wood ones. I'm serious. You guys think I'm shucking and jiving. Then when you get your hair all full of the suds, you know, you get it all sudsy and everything, man. You got that suds just flying all over your hair. Jump out of the shower and look at yourself in the mirror, man. It ain't too pretty of a sight, but, you know, with all that suds. And I said, right on, Ochoa. Keep doing it, man. Keep listening to those people. You go to San Jose where you used to do that drinking, man, at all them clubs down there, and let them people know how your life has changed, that your mother don't have to pray the same way, that you got friends like Sam, you got a wife like Sally. You know, you go tell them people, man, that the right thing that they're doing is not, and I mean the right thing today for me. It's smart to stay sober, man. You know, that's what we're here for, to help one another do the impossible. Nothing before ever worked until I came to you and you did the impossible. You gave me back a new life, man. You gave me back a new life. And I will never, ever forget that. Thank you.